Does Jesus represent us to the Father, or does he represent the Father to us? Welcome to Probe. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. We're going to be dealing with those two questions the next 2 weeks. And we're going to be dealing with it in the context of sanctuary themes in the book of Hebrews. My conversation partners are Pedrito Maynard Reed and Bruce Johansson, New Testament colleagues in the Walla Walla College School of Theology. Now, let's deal with this issue of Jesus representing us to the Father. Where in the Bible would you find that most prominently? Is that in Hebrews? Is that other books as well? If you were to say, here's the book that I'm going to define Jesus representing us to the Father, where would you go in Scripture?
Oh, I think the idea of representation to the Father comes out fairly clearly in the book of Hebrews and in Paul's writings. The whole idea of mediator, though, is one that it's a rich idea, but it does play on some people's thoughts that God is scary. Therefore, we need Jesus to mediate between us and the Father. I have difficulties with that. But Jesus as mediating for us because we are weak, because we don't have the kind of strength we should, the kind of insight we should. He's a helper, mediator in terms of helper. Somehow I feel a little bit more comfortable with that, Alden.
The scriptural writers, the New Testament particularly, I'm right in context.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear that Paul was addressing, and the writer of the Hebrews, a particular different context than, the gospel writers.
Exactly.
Bruce, what would you see as the kind of context that, say, Paul was writing to? Maybe the issues and the place and the culture that would make him want to emphasize that dimension versus, say, when we get to next week, some of these other writers.
Yeah, I do think that God as being utterly holy and terrifying, in a sense, to people. I think his language was tailored to minister to people's needs. You don't need to worry about God. You have a mediator in Jesus Christ.
Are there some things in the religions of the Greek or Roman world that would lend to any of this? Even the Egypt. And some of these other things that Hebrews, or would there be anything in there? It's just striking me right now. I never thought about it before. That would lend itself to the type of people that you were talking
to.
Well,
in connection with that, is there any place in the Old Testament that would suggest that we could cheerfully let ourselves be at ease in God's presence?
Oh, my. Moses in the burning bush, take off your shoes.
See, the sense of an overpowering God.
Yeah.
Is so overwhelming.
Would it be overwhelming to the readers of Hebrews and Pauline writings that is not as overwhelming to the readers of some other New Testament literature?
I don't know, Pedrito. I would like to cast my net wider. I think every human being has a sense of not measuring up, a sense of unholiness, a sense of defeat in many parts of their lives, a sense of imperfection. If we're really honest with ourselves, some people play hide and seek with that and get into perfectionism.
But what was the problem with these people that these had to emphasize it? It's not just every human being, because I don't find it as strong in other aspects of the New Testament as I find it in Pauline and Hebrews.
Well, now, one thing we're going to do, Pedrito, and we've already alluded to it, that the emphasis of Jesus representing the Father to us, which is on the surface, a friendlier view of God.
Yes.
That's primarily in the Gospel of John.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Whereas Paul takes much more of a greater gulf, assumes the holiness of God and the unworthiness of human beings.
Mm-hmm. And why was that? Why would he do that?
I'm inclined to think that there's at least temperament involved here.
This is what I'm trying to struggle with, to say that God works in context. Many people are trying to, they have their old theology, say, of the atonement, and they will just go to those particular texts to support the idea, wondering if God works, you're right, in temperament,
See, I think that's why God gave us four Gospels.
Yes.
Covering the same material, but four different perspectives.
I think contexts are really important, but I do think that we are talking on such a high level of generality of human nature that these different authors, back at their time, used different pictures to meet different people's needs. Mm-hmm. And I think those needs, on a very high level of generality, are part of the human nature, and they're still valid today. Let's compare substitutionary doctrine of atonement with the moral influence theory of atonement. There's people who absolutely lean towards the moral influence.
You want to explain those.
Moral influence means that God basically reaches out to us. We love because He first loved us.
And that's based on John.
It's based on John.
If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Now, I think there's some language that I've tried to use to keep away from the nasty stuff.
Yes.
Because moral influence is often seen so negative, as penal substitutionary can sound.
Right.
But if you take the different mental picture, the Pauline one sees Jesus representing people who feel terribly worthless to an almighty God.
Yes.
Whereas that would be the object of atonement, the cross is pointed heavenward towards the great standard of good up there. Whereas if you turn it around and Jesus represents the Father to us, that's often called the subject of atonement
because
he is pointing to us, to our hearts and the influence here. Mm-hmm. Both are biblical, and I think at great risk we emphasize
one against the other.
They both need to be there, even if our particular experiences may not have the same balance.
Yeah, absolutely right. These are all pictures, and I would like to say that pictures are so powerful because they give us a clear message. When we take the pictures and try to turn them into, once again, logical constructs and build a logical propositional thing out of one of the pictures to the exclusion of the others, I think we get into trouble. Mm-hmm. And the thing with the substitutionary doctrine of atonement, the danger there is that God turns into an ogre and Jesus protects us from him.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And then you somehow get the feeling that the real God is mean and Jesus is nice.
That's right. See? And the opposite one is that God is so nice, people can turn him into a warm fuzzy. He loves us no matter what we do. Right. There's no accountability, and people can go, I'll sin, but he'll forgive me.
Right.
That is the abuse of the other. I think we need these different pictures and put them together, let them resonate together, and bring us balance.
Yeah. And I also think that one of the best ways to do that is not just each one of us doing this in our own private lives. We need a community. So that if I am distorting,
somebody else helps me to get back to balance.
You see, and that's because if you see me going down a road that is dangerous for me or for other people, you have a responsibility before God to help me.
Yeah.
That's if I'm willing to listen, though, which I think that's part of the problem. We're not willing to listen in conversation.
That's true.
We come with our own way of thinking because of our experience, our backgrounds, and we feel that we're right and not open to conversation.
But you know, Pedrito, what I've found that my friends, and I can think of a couple of key instances, people that I really appreciated, came and told me messages that I wouldn't have ever taken from, quotes, an enemy. But when I saw the anguish of their souls in coming to tell me a hard message, but they did it because they were my friend.
Yes.
Now, that makes all the difference in the world.
Huge difference. Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of like the phrase, "I'll be praying for you," can be the most precious phrase in the world.
Yeah.
It can also be the most angry.
That's right.
If I say, "I'll be praying for you, Patrick," at the end of an argument, those are fighting words.
Yes.
And so somehow we need to keep both of them going. Now, there's one verse in Hebrews that I would like for us to focus on. And before we do that, though, I would like to read an Old Testament passage, which I think points up the human need for substitution. Mm-hmm. Micah 6:6-8. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't mention substitution in the passage, but it leads us right to the threshold where then Jesus' sacrifice fits in. Micah says, "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" You notice the psychology. It goes all the way up there to child sacrifice. Mm-hmm. This desperate urging in one's soul to put things right with God. Now, Micah doesn't finish it. He says, he has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. It is my conviction that when Jesus came and paid the full price, this is God himself paying the price, mm-hmm. that puts that psychology to sleep forever. If you That's ever right. think that you can do anything to yeah. please God, yeah. to earn your favor with him,
yeah.
It's not possible. Yeah. Jesus has done that already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's come to Hebrews 7:25, this amazing one. And if one of you have a modern translation, either the New or Revised Standard Version, I think the KJV has something about saving them to the uttermost. But what yes. does 7:25 say? Do one of you have the
yeah.
NIV?
I have the RSV. Consequently, he is able to save for all time those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. Mm-hmm. For all time, probably. But I do like the old King James, to the uttermost.
The uttermost has this absolute,
yeah.
the end of the world beyond.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Which translation are you using?
I'm using the New Revised, I think.
New Revised, yeah, same one. Yeah. Yeah. Some yeah. of those old words just have an incredible
mm-hmm.
power to them.
Oh, they do.
And yeah. They have an implication there that I think is really important for us to meet. Now, let's talk a bit about the meaning then, regardless of which words we use. Consequently, he's able for all time to save those who approach to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them.
Yeah.
What does that, how should we unpack that in the context of the book of Hebrews? That he always lives to make intercession for us.
Yeah. I think, once again, the huge message is that all the repeated sacrifices, whether yearly or daily, all of the priests that preceded Christ, who succeeded each other, they all were subject to death, and, mm-hmm. and you had different priests. Here is a priest who is not subject to death. Mm-hmm. He lives forever. Okay? His sacrifice does not need to be repeated. It's once for all. It is for all time. It is to the uttermost. That is the message. This is the perfect sacrifice.
I just put on my Palm Pilot and found my NIV, and it says to save completely.
Completely. To save completely.
Yeah, that's a great translation.
That's a, nice that's a great a nice translation. Yeah.
Now, let's take just a few moments here to build a bridge for next week. This picture here of always living to make intercession for us has to be an incomplete picture, because John especially, and we're going to be looking at the Johannine picture, mm-hmm. says that there's going to come a time when we won't need an intercessor.
Yeah.
In other words, as we look to the future, we will be in God's presence
yes.
without fear, and there will be no need of an intercessor.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's very important that we don't take one verse
mm-hmm.
and just impose it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
The book of Hebrews is emphasizing you've got an intercessor forever and always.
That's right.
And it just really drives that picture.
Completeness, I think.
Yeah, there's a certain completeness.
That's right. Yeah.
So if we summarize what we have tried to emphasize today, that there is something deep within the human soul that suggests that we really need help, that we are unworthy, and that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, God incarnate, came, lived, died, was resurrected, and is coming again, and he ever lives to make intercession for us. That's a powerful message, one that we dare not ever overlook. Thank you, Pedrito and Bruce. Next week, we are going to then look at Jesus, our sacrifice and salvation. We're going to look at some people who perhaps have some hesitations about that phrase, sacrifice. My thanks to Steve Cochran, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For Probe, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194. Or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.